Hello everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Angola West Africa. Hi, I'm Douglas Black, your host for today's edition. We're coming to you from beautiful downtown Moho Bento, where whenever it rains, the water runs like a river in the streets, and the traffic is terrible every morning. But if you ever have a chance, come and visit. Today we have an excellent program for you. We have an interview which I think you're going to enjoy to listen to. So I hope you like us on your favorite platform, and come back again and tell your friends and family about our podcast. We believe we're the only podcast that's focused on news, current affairs, and interviews for Angola, West Africa. So thank you very much for joining us today, and now let's get on with our interview. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Angola, West Africa, our podcast that focuses on current affairs, news, and interesting interviews in regards to Angola. Today, we are very fortunate. We have the author of a recent book, Mr. Shimbanda. He's here to speak with us about his book and a little bit about the history that he has from Angola and in the United States. So, Mr. Shimbanda, thank you very much for being with us. I'm really looking forward to our conversation. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Mr. Douglas. I appreciate that to have me.
Well, you're most welcome. Why don't we get started by you telling us a little bit about your history, your early days in Angola, where you were born. I believe it was in Nova Lisboa you spent some time. So give us a little bit of background about your early days.
Thank you so much, Mr. Douglas Black. I was born in a mission station in Mbunje, founded by an African-American Congregational Church here in Washington, D.C. in the early 19th century. At the age of 10, my father, as a carpenter, found unemployment at the Prosarium Cavango Station, which is just south of Nova Lisboa. Cavango is about 120 miles from a Nova Lisboa location. Then in 1952, my father found a job at this leprosarium, and we moved to Cavango, my mom and two siblings. Cavango was in the province of Wambo, so my primary and secondary education were done in the mission station in Dondi, which is about 40 miles from Nova Lisboa going east. At the age of 18, I was recruited in the Portuguese army, and I became a sergeant, and I served for 3.5 years. And in this city, I met my bride, Anna Isabel, and we married. When I was deployed in Cubao, which is another city in the district of Benguela. After being discharged from the army, I found a job at the financial department, and I worked at human resources. Then in 1975, the Portuguese decided to give independence to Angolans after the three Angolans party fought in the guerrilla warfare about 2 decades. In October 1975, I was selected to study in the United States along with 14 other Angolan students, and I sponsored by African American Institute, which was an institution under the United Nations. After 1 month we left in October, in November, the Civil War broke. So my family was in Angola at that time. And from there, all this story actually is in the book, what I have done, that I have mentioned already.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you left for the United States, did you have a feeling that the Civil War was going to begin, or you had no idea?
No, I didn't have I didn't have any idea, but there were some sporadic shootings among the three liberation movements, MPLA, UNITA, and FNLA, were kind of giving a sign that the war will be imminent, but I didn't have any idea.
Now, when you left for the United States, could you speak English, or did you learn it when you were in the U.S.?
I learned English when I came into U.S. The primary language is Portuguese, of course. I did know a little English because in high school in Angola, we learned just English. A little English, but just writing, and I was a British English. But when I came to the United States, I could not really understand what Americans were talking about.
Wow, that must have been a challenge. I remember when I was first learning Portuguese, it's so different from English that it really was frustrating. It took me at least a year and a half before I could, order something in the restaurant. So I could only imagine how you felt when you got to the U.S. and didn't speak English. So.
It was a challenge. Yeah. I tell you, the first 2 weeks, we went to one restaurant and we ate all the 2 weeks chicken because we didn't eat the chicken. Chicken was obvious, but the other menus, we could not read it.
It sounds like you and I have very similar experiences. I learned Portuguese. I worked for many years in Rio de Janeiro. I remember going to a restaurant, and I used to tell my friends, I could sit there surrounded by people, but I felt like I was totally alone because I didn't know what they were saying and I couldn't speak to them. So it really gave me the advantage. I really wanted to learn Portuguese, so I worked really hard on it. So yes. I agree. Sometimes the waiters would actually laugh at me when I tried to order something. So now, you're in Indiana, if I remember correctly now. Is that correct?
Yes, now, I am in Indiana.
Yeah. Now, that's when you came to the U.S., you went to school at Ball State. Is that correct?
No. Actually, when our group came into the United States, we stationed in Washington, D.C., and we went to Georgetown University to learn English as a second language. And so we stayed there for a year. But since we were speaking Portuguese, as we came together, our sponsor decided, because we were not progressing really, improving our English. So our sponsor decided to separate us. So I was sent after 9 months, I was sent to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale just for one more semester to sharpen my English. And I take the TOEFL, which is a test for the foreign students. Then I improved my score very much just for 3 months I was in Carbondale. So then I came to Ball State in Indiana afterwards.
Well, and then so you got to see quite a bit of the U.S., at least the Midwest and then Washington, D.C. And so you did see quite a bit of the U.S. in your early days.
Yes, I did.
Okay. I did. Now, during this time, Donna Anna was still in Angola, correct?
Yes, exactly. She was.
Okay. And did you have kids at that time, or were your kids born in the U.S.?
No, all our kids, 5 kids, were born in Angola. When I left Angola, our youngest, who was a girl, she was 10 months. I left her. So all 5 kids were born in Angola.
Okay, and now are they...
I left them in nobody's ball.
Okay. Are your children, are they now in the United States?
They are all of them. Anna made the arrangement in such a way that she brought all the kids when she left Angola. And it was wonderful. So all of them are here in the United States.
I understand from looking at some of the excerpts from your book, which we'll speak about a little bit later, but yes. It was really quite a challenge for Dona Ana to get out of Angola, and I think she went to Portugal and had some things in Portugal before she could come to the U.S. Can tell us a little bit about the trials and challenges that Dona Ana had when she was trying to get to where you were in the U.S.
Well, actually, God was really involved in this process. That time, there were no communication between us, between Anne and I when I was here in the United States. But believing in God, really, we prayed and God just united us spiritually. There was a missionary who went to Angola from the U.S., and I knew him because he was a missionary in Angola, and he acknowledged that he was going back to Angola. Then I just wrote a little note for Anna because I could not write much because everything was censored in Angola. So I indicate that I was trying to get them out of Angola. And she understood that. Then she tried to make arrangements just to get out. But to get out, it was difficult. She had to ask authorization from she was a nurse at that time in Angola. And she asked for vacation, just 1 month vacation to go to Portugal and allegedly to get eye examination because there were no doctors, really effective doctors for eye examination, to go to Portugal to have an eye examination. And she had to buy round tickets for the kids. She took with her all the kids, 5 kids with her to Portugal. But when she got to Portugal, fortunately, we could communicate for the first time after 2 years without talking to her or really communicate with her. And then afterwards, she went to the embassy, American embassy, to ask authorization or visa to come to the United States. But she didn't have a passport, and all the kids didn't have a passport. They had just a travel document between Angola and Portugal. That travel document wouldn't allow to go anywhere else. So the embassy, the American embassy, refused to, because I was on a J-1 visa as a student. And so I had to work hard here in the United States. One pastor of the church I went to, named Fred there, I talked to him, and he voluntarily and graciously accepted my request. And he helped me with the other churches in Muncie, Indiana, helped us to contact the politicians, the senators, congressmen, just to cut the red tapes at the immigration naturalization. But this took another two years. So Anna was stranded in Portugal for 2 years while I was trying to make arrangement here in the U.S. for them to come. Eventually, the red tapes were cut, and I was granted political asylum, and the family eventually were granted also a refugee status, and they came to join me as refugees.
My goodness, that's quite a story. So I just can't imagine that you spent so much time not being able to communicate, not knowing what's going on or where she was or your kids. And that had to be extremely difficult. I can only imagine.
It was very difficult. Being a student, I spent 50 minutes at the library just thinking about the family and the 50 minutes in the book. So I was really struggling myself too, just because I love my family and I need the family to come. So it was a challenge, both Anna and I.
Yeah, thank goodness you had the people that could help you and eventually get Anna and the kids with you. That's an amazing story. So
yes.
My goodness. Now, have you been back to visit Angola since you came to the U.S.?
Yes, I went to Angola for the first time. My wife and our daughter in 2000. That time, actually, the war was still on. When we went back, we could not travel by cars or any road transportation because the bridge was still broken and they had a landmine everywhere. So the only way we landed in Luanda, then we flew. Only way was just to fly from one city to another that time in 2000. So we visited Luanda. Then we saw the families in Iwambu and Lubango. That's all. Then we left after. I went back with a group. There is a group in Colorado Spring, here in Colorado Spring, in Denver, Colorado Spring, group. The team which goes to Angola, used to go to Angola, and planted the church. And I was invited to go with them in 2002. So that I could interpret from Portuguese to English and vice versa. So then the third time, it was 2018, I went with my wife, our oldest son, and again, my daughter. So those are three times I went back to Angola. Hello?
Yes, when you went back, did you go back with a U.S. passport or did you have an Angolan passport? What document did you use to go back to Angola?
I used the U.S. passport. At that time, we were already citizens of the United States because we became a U.S. citizen in 1995. My wife, my daughter, and the other kids, we became a U.S. citizen in 1995.
Ah, okay. So you had to go through the visa process and all of that.
Visa process, yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. Now, I assume, I know over the years I've seen lots of changes. Did you see lots of changes in Angola as you would make your three trips back there? Were things getting better or what's your view of how things had changed?
In 2000, I was really shocked to see the broken, you know, the war just destroy all the buildings, especially in the city of Nova Lisboa, where including the department I was working in, the Department of Finance, was all broken. I mean, windows, walls, and I cried to see that. But in 2002, when the peace settlement happened, the things were kind of improving a little bit. Even in Iwambu, there were some improvements. Then in 2018 was much better. I could see some potholes in the city of Nova Lisboa. And Also, the buildings were remodeled, and was a lot of improvements in 2018.
Yeah, like in LaWanda during the boom of 2005 to say 2008, you know, lots of new buildings, lots of construction. So I've seen lots of changes too. I think I first came to LaWanda in 2005, and going around the city, there were areas like in the area called Sao Paulo, you could still see pot marks in the side of the buildings where the bullets had hit. And I remember going south to Cabo Ledo, and just as you come to the bridge over the Kwanza River, there on the right hand side, there's a burned out tank that's, I think, still there today. When you go there. So
I think we drove it one time, I think it was 2018, we drove it from Luanda to Benguela. And we saw in the Kwanza River, we saw those burned trucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. And now, before you get to the Kwanza River, there's this huge international golf course. So it's just...
Oh, yeah. A lot amazing. Of improvements.
Yeah, it's amazing how things have changed. Well, yes. What are your fondest memories of Angola from when you were there?
Well, actually, my fondest memories, first of all, being here, when I was working at the finance department, I worked in human resources as a payroll, actually. And I had some privilege just being an employee of a finance department, because we used to write the checks for the employees. So wherever we went, we had a kind of a privilege to access some locations that other regular people couldn't. We were given some privilege of that. And also by doing that, even in Cicero, I was able to put Cicero in a daycare, a very special daycare, that time, which nobody, Angolans, I'm talking about Angola, it was for the white, for daycare. But I couldn't put Cicero in that daycare, that's because of those privilege I had. And the second memory, since I work at finance department, I was approached by the UNITA after the Prime Minister, the Treasurer of UNITA was nominated in 1975, was nominated for the Minister of Agriculture in Luanda. So the vacancy, I had to substitute him. I was nominated for being a treasurer. And I dealt with thousands of dollars of the party. So this was kind of a memory stuck into my mind. I had that privilege also. So
amazing, yeah. Well, that was a very, very high position that you were placed into. So that's amazing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, on to another subject. And doing a little bit of research about you, I understand that you love long distance running. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, running actually, it has been since my childhood. We used to go to school just walking like 10 miles, going to school, going to church 10 miles. And also being in Kavango and Dondi, where I went to school for secondary education, we used to walk. My classmates and I, we walked. And we had to spend one night somewhere before we reach the destination. So running and walking was just my primary, it was natural for me. Then when I came to US, just because of the stress I had, my family in Portugal, to start with, in Angola, in Portugal, then in Portugal, I had to beat the stress by exercising, and running was my forte. So I started running just a shorter distance. Then I developed participating in the races, shorter races, and I came up just to become a marathon runner. And I ran a 16 marathon in my life. Running just was a way of my life. I had a passion for running.
Good. I've always been a very strong believer in exercise being health management. And it sounds like, from my perspective, I miss it if I don't exercise. So I think you had the same feeling. Do you still run today? Do you jog?
No, actually, I had a knee replacement in 2010. And my doctor recommended not to run again, but walk, because I was pounding on my knees just... And just to preserve my prosthesis, he said that he recommended not to run anymore, but walking, hiking, doing some other exercise in the gym, but not running. So okay. I quit running. Yeah.
Well, and for the benefit of our audience, I know they can't see you, but we were joking earlier when I saw you and your son. You look younger than he does, so the exercise must be doing very good for you. Now, moving a little bit closer now to the book, I see that a gentleman named Harold Brown he had some role to play in your book. Can you tell us a little bit about who he is and how he helped you with the book, if you can?
Yes, Harold Brown is a storyteller. He's a detailed person whenever he tells the story. He's a long-standing friend from the church I used to go in Muncie. And Ann and I used to tell our story to many groups in the churches, in the community. And whenever we told our story of separation and the reunion, whatever, Harold always listening to our story said, "Joe, this story has to be written, should be put in writing, because it is a good story. It will be good for your descendants." And during the pandemic in 2019, he called me up and said, "Joe, you know, I am here homebound. I cannot do anything because of the pandemic. I cannot go anywhere. How about if we put together your story, and I can help you to edit your story, just to put it in writing, just for keepsake for your descendants." I said, "Okay, thank you so much for doing that." Then we accepted. We started just editing for 1 hour every night from 9 to 10 o'clock. So that's what we did. Was very graciously doing that for me. Just did it for acting of love. Okay, you know, he didn't ask me for anything, and mm-hmm. Just a good friend.
Okay. Now, is Harold an American, or is he an Angolan, or?
No, Harold is an American. Okay. Harold Brown.
Now, approximately how long did it take you from when you began with Harold and you had the finished product? Was it a year or how long?
About 2 years.
2 years?
Until the publishing, it took really about 2 years.
Okay. Right. Okay.
But well, I had compiled all the writing and all the papers for 20 years. I had all the information with me, just putting it together.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Yeah. Well, then, for our audience, the name of your book is Enduring Hardships, Survival by Faith and Works in Our Uncharted Territories. Excellent book. Why don't you tell us, I know you've told a lot of the stories that you have in your books. Is there anything else that you want to say in regards to the content of your book and why people should pick it up and read it?
The book actually is a book of faith. Faith in the action. Because if you just believe that the things will happen, but you don't act, there is no way you accomplish your goal. So enduring hardships, we had so many hardships, Anandai had many hardship. His side just, and we have been helped by God. God actually moved the people. God works through people. And we as human, we are socially related to each other. So people work together to help others. And I was helped to help my family. And God work for that, for that purpose. And the book really tells the love you have for other people, and the faith you and the hope. Many are struggling. Even today in our world, many people are struggling to with the war, the famine, the pandemic, fires, and they are going through tough times. And if you don't have faith in God, sometimes you cannot accomplish yourself what you can. And the book tells about all this. And the book was written, the motivation of the book really is not because that I would have money from it, but since the people helped us so much, Anna was helped in Angola, I was helped here, and we feel so blessed that we need to bless others. And we hope that whoever reads this book will be compelled that the person will have a chance to help other people, because we have to help as we have been help others also. So this is really the key of the book, just to give encouragement to the readers that the resources we have to give it to someone else to be happy. You know, happiness is a temporary, but your joy is a permanent. If you have happiness just because you have something, it will disappear. But if you have a joy, even at the time of pain, going through difficulties, the joy always is there. Any circumstance you run into. And the book tells about this, that we need to help each other. And even if you have hardships, but if you depend on helping each other, you will prevail and thrive in life.
Well, that's a remarkable message that everyone should understand and pick up your book and read. I mean, after talking to you, the challenges that you and Donna Anna and your family had throughout the years, I mean, you have your faith, and I agree very much with something you said, that you have your faith, but you also have to take action. You can't be still. And when you're doing action, then, you know, God will help you. And just keep your eye on, as they say, eye on the prize and move forward. So that's fantastic. I really recommend that everybody listening to us today find your book. I'm going to put in the show notes how they can find it on Amazon.com. And I mean, you can download an electronic version or you can order a hard copy depending on where you're at. But really recommend that everybody pick up a copy and give it a read. It's a wonderful message, and it's about enduring through hardships, just as the title says, and keeping your eye on the prize and moving forward. So as we're beginning to wrap up here a little bit, do you have, as they say in Portuguese, Senhor tem saudades de Angola, or How do you feel? Are you really an American now, and there's not, you don't miss Angola that much?
No, actually, we have some attachments to Angola. You know, when we went back in 2018, Anna and I saw some kids going just on the streets, young kids, without going to school. They didn't have a means of going to school. They couldn't. And specifically, we saw four boys. They were orphans. And those four boys, the age of 12, 10, 8, and 6, the sixth boy, before we left the house where we spent the time, Anna's sisters, before we left, he cried so much. Said, please, take me wherever you go. Please take me. I mean, he was really crying so hard, and it broke our heart. So Anne and I, we decided to put them in an orphanage. And one of the director in Iwambu, they have an orphanage. They have in Iwambu, Benguela, and Lubango. So they put those four boys in an orphanage. And they have a mother who can take care of them, and they're going to school. So we have those attachments. That's why we decided to have a scholarship fund, the Chimbanda Scholarship Fund, so that the people can read the book. Whoever read the book is compelled also to donate to that scholarship fund. And it will be tax deductible under the Advanced Gospel in Angola, which there is a website for that also. And this Advanced Gospel of Angola is a holistic organization, really. And they provide the education, which we are under the Chimbanda Scholarship Fund, and at the seminary to train pastors just to evangelize, and also to heal. They work in health care in Lubango. Steve Foster is the doctor who runs the hospital, just to help. And also the agriculture to train the people who to be able to have their own crops effectively and to feed their family. So those the things that we have attachment to Angola. We still our hearts, we are here in the United States, but we are working hard to help those underserved kids after high school or medu, they don't have any means to go to college, and that we are helping those kids who are eager to further their education. So please, if you hear this message, read the book, read the message, and also be compelled to donate to help those
kids. Excellent. What is the web address for the gospel in Angola? You said there's a website. Why don't you tell us?
There is a website. Probably Cicero or I can send it to you in email.
Yeah, please send it to me, and I'll put it in the show notes so that people can find it. That would be great. Okay. And again, as we're beginning to wrap up, there's one question I always ask everyone that I interview, and I'll ask you, sir. If someone is coming to visit Angola, where would you recommend they go see? What is a beautiful place in Angola that you would recommend someone needs to visit before they leave? Is there such a place you can think of?
Actually, Angola has a lot of resorts to visit. I would recommend to go to Lubango. Lubango is a very beautiful place. They have Senora do Monte. Senora do Monte is like they have a statue like in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. It's a very beautiful place. And before actually the war, many South Africans used to come, South Africans, to come and camp around that location. The weather is so beautiful. It's not very as hot as Luanda. It's like a temperate, it's very mild temperature, and it's beautiful all year round. It gets a little bit cold in the winter, like in the August winter in the south, July, August, but it's a very beautiful place. And another place, I would say, the parks. They have a national park in Angola. Believe or not, they do have in Kisama. I don't know if you have had the chance to go there.
Is that on that's close to the river, right?
Yes.
I've been there. I've seen some of the, they have some wild animals there.
Wild animals, yes. Yes. It's a nice place to visit there.
Yeah, I agree. That is a very nice place to visit.
Very, very nice place. So, but, the Angola is a very beautiful. They need the tourism. In my opinion, they should improve their tourism because it's a very nice country to visit. And since the war is over now, I mean, you can go everywhere, anywhere, mm-hmm. anywhere you want to.
I agree. I tell everyone that Angola has wonderful natural beauty. It just a lot of it's untouched. I mean, the population of Angola is not that great yet, so there's really, when you get in the interior, you're often by yourself. It's a beautiful place. Beautiful place. All right. Mr. Shimbanda, I want you to know it has been a pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate you coming and visiting with us, and hopefully sometime in the future we can have you on the show again. Is there anything that you may want to discuss that we haven't talked about as we've gone through our conversation? Feel free to tell us, or if not, we can we'll begin wrapping up our conversation.
I think we cover all what about, but again, this is just a summary of our journey. The book will tell more into details. So whatever I didn't talk, it is in the book.
Good.
I have many readers. Their feedback said that whenever they get the book, it's harder they put down the reading.
Very good. Very good. Well, once again, I recommend everyone that's going to be listening to our podcast, go to Amazon.com, and we'll put the links in the show notes. And please download or buy a copy. And also, we'll put in the address of the website for Gospel in Angola. Make a donation, help all the good works that we've talked about today. It's really been a pleasure. I want to say thank you very much, and I look forward to us talking again in the future. So
thank you.
It's, it's evening.
I appreciate it very much, Mr. Black, to have me and talk to you, and hopefully the message will be heard by many and act on that message. As I said, faith without action is dead.
What a great conversation. Really enjoyed talking to Mr. Joseph Shimbanda. What a gentleman. Please check out our show notes. There you can find how to locate his new book. And I highly recommend that you download it or order a hard copy. The name of the book is Enduring Hardships, Survival by Faith and Works in Our Uncharted Territories. It's really a compelling story about facing hardships and using faith to overcome the problems. So please do that, and also check out his charity, which is doing lots of good work for children in Angola. If you liked our podcast, please tell your friends and family about us. We believe we're the only podcast focusing on news, interviews, current affairs in Angola, West Africa. So I hope you liked our show. Once again, this is Douglas Black, your host. Please come back for our next show, and thank you very much for listening. It's been our pleasure to have you here visiting with us. Also, I'd like to thank our sponsor, High Performance Services. Please check out their location information in our show notes. If you have requirements in Angola for VSAT or fiber optic services, please call our friends at High Performance Services. I'm sure they'll give you a good attention to your requirements. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. Come back again soon. And for now, ciao.